Hey out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 369. This is going to be an interesting edition we got for you here. There's a lot of fun stuff that's been happening recently, and hopefully the episode that you're hearing is skip-free because we fixed all the issues that happened on the last show. If you listened to Caffeination number 368, which we debuted several days ago here, you might have noticed that every once in a while there was a little bit of a stop and then a jump forward a couple seconds, and every once in a while it didn't really make sense. More, I mean, less so than usual for my show. I'm going to give you a little short little explanation as to why that happened in a couple minutes. We're trying to further the quality of what we got going on here at the Caffeination. Hopefully that everything will be, that everything's going to sound better and be better. And in my haste to do so, I kind of cut a couple corners that I really shouldn't ought to have. So you had the unfortunate incident that happened, and nobody really wants that. So we're going to move on forward. Hopefully I'm going to learn from the experience, and you'll be able to too in a couple little things. We are, of course, proud to be a member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. All the other member shows, including us, have agreed to create child-safe, family-friendly, and educational content, and it's all listed over at techpodcasts.com. We're also a proud member of the Blueberry Podcast Network. That's Blubrry. It's Blueberry without the B's. It's a social podcast site. It's kind of like MySpace for podcasts. So you can head on over there and surf around, find out who all the shows that you listen to. So it's kind of a fun little way to wander about and do your own little bit of surfing in there. All right, this is the Caffeination Podcast. We are lovingly hosted over at www.caffeination.com. All comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, caffeination@gmail.com. Now that we have all that out of the way, I'm going to give you a little, quick little rundown on exactly what went down here the other night. Apparently, switched over to the computer that I'm currently using now for the workstation here in the Caffeination Lair. It was actually a surplus machine from work, and it's all well and good. It does a fantastic job. The problem was I didn't realize that I've been using the onboard sound card. Now, for those of you who don't know what that is, the onboard sound card is a sound card that is built into the motherboard. That wouldn't be so bad, except the fact that I was also using the onboard video card, which I still am for the very short moment. And that wouldn't be so bad if I wasn't such a power user. I wasn't trying to use every scrap of a spare processing cycle to try and do what I needed to do here for this here podcast. That being said, with the video running and all the different things in Firefox and trying to manage the sound at the same point in time, she just can't take it anymore, Captain. So that's what happened. The processor, the stuttering that you heard was actually the processor attempting to catch up and process through all the sound that was coming in. So by putting in a sound card from an older computer, I removed that load from the processor, removed that issue, and I think we're back to recording smooth. In fact, all the music that we have playing here and everything that's all rocking out, what I try to do is I try to record it in one shot. So pretty much the only time you hear an edit in the middle of the show, which you shouldn't theoretically hear any edits, but the only time you hear an edit in the middle of the show should be if I specifically wanted to take something out, or if I yawned, the dog barked, the cats meowed, who knows, dogs and cats living together, it was mass hysteria. So, we have a lot of stuff happening here. PodCamp Philly is merely weeks away. If you are not familiar with what PodCamp Philly is, then you haven't been listening to the show for very long, but that's all right. A PodCamp in general is a new media unconference. Nobody knows what an unconference is, so the easiest way to say it is PodCamp in general is a conference. It's a low-cost, awesome way to meet other people who are just as crazy about podcasting as you might be. If you are a podcaster, if you're a listener, if you're just somebody who's looking to try and make a business online, and you're interested in new media, blogging, podcasting, whatever the case may be, for $21, you too can head on down to Temple University October 3rd and 4th and get in on a huge, awesome time. I mean, I really can't stress this enough, how fun and informative this can be. It is SEO, it is business, it is blogging, it is podcasting. It's something as simple as where to point the mic when you're trying to record. Another thing that I've been forgetting in the past couple episodes, you're not supposed to speak directly into the mic. Don't know if you knew that. But if you went to a PodCamp, you might learn something like that, as well as hundreds of other tiny little tips. And despite all that, you can still go to parties and all other kinds of fun things during the event. It's really not a sight to be missed. So I highly suggest that you head on over to PodCampPhilly.com and register if you're going to be in the Philadelphia area October 3rd and 4th. All right, before we get too much further into this episode, I did want to make mention of the sponsor for today's show. Today's show is sponsored in part by GoToMeeting. GoToMeeting is a fantastic software that allows you to cut out the middlemen when you're conducting meetings, when you want to do business the right way. The middleman being that time that you spend going from point A to point B. You can condense your day, you can get more done, you can meet with more people, and you can do it more efficiently all with GoToMeeting. From the comfort of your own desk with the environment that you understand, imagine being able to demo software that works in very specific environments and you're working on everything else and you're trying to get investors. How can you do that if the software fails when you take it to somebody else's demo machine? Easily, you can just head on over to GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast, get yourself a great and interesting trial that you can work for the next 30 days, and you can demo products, you can meet with people across country, across the world seamlessly. They don't have to have the client installed. It's really a wonderful way to conduct business, do it quickly, and do it efficiently. So if you'd like to start your free 30-day trial, I highly suggest you head on over to www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. Again, for the 30-day free trial, please head on over to www.gotomeeting.com/tech podcasts. All right, we have a ton of news to cover here for today's show. We got the news in brief, the geek cruft, and then the food and caffeinated bits. And I got to tell you, we are a little bit backloaded when it comes to food and caffeinated bits, so I've wasted enough valuable time up front and personal telling you what all exactly is going wrong here. So we're going to dive right on in. Up first, we have the Beatles are bigger than Jesus on Google. Now, this was a heretical statement uttered by the Beatles way back in the 60s. Actually, in March of 1966, Lennon caused an uproar when he told the Evening Standard, "I don't know what's going to go first, rock and roll or Christianity, but we're more popular than Jesus right now." That, of course, caused a whole huge firestorm. Except here's the thing. This past month, it happened to be true in Google search alone. That was just because of the Beatles debuting the Beatles Rock Band, and they actually had a larger search volume for the Beatles than they did for Jesus. So take that as you will. I consider it with a grain of salt. I think it's kind of fun. I think it was more of a fluff story. That's why it's in the news in brief, and we're not going to cover it for too much. All right, moving right along. A font nerd smack fight. Arial versus Helvetica. If you head on over to informationarchitects.jp, one of my absolute favorite sites when you're talking about trends and you're talking about design, they actually break down the differences between Arial and Helvetica fonts. You didn't think there was that much different between fonts, but I got to tell you, most designers are in love with Helvetica. There is a movie for Helvetica on how the person actually went about creating the font. And if you really look at it, not only does it conform to a lot of different stylistic standards, and it's really a lovely straight-faced font that has a lot of very interesting right angles and things that are in there, but you can kind of see how the two fonts differ in the very, very subtlest of ways, and the way that it can make the difference overall when you're looking at a document or you're looking at ad copy or something like that. So it's really kind of an interesting, it's more of a visual thing. They have, for every letter ARCQ and 1, FTGR and the percent symbol, they show you red, a blue, and a black. The black is the combination of the two. For the most part, Arial and Helvetica are very, very similar, but for some and for others, there's a little bit of overlap one way or another. It's always kind of fun to see this, and there's a lot of designers out there that are just head over heels for Helvetica. So I just wanted to kind of share that because I thought it was interesting. All right, next, police play Wii bowling during a drug raid. Apparently a bunch of police were all getting on in on a drug raid. They decided to bust on into this guy's house looking for all kinds of contraband. What they found within the first 20 minutes of them being there was a Nintendo Wii. A Nintendo Wii is not a piece of contraband by any stretch of the imagination, but the officers then proceeded to play the Nintendo bowling for the next 9 hours. This would not have gotten caught by anybody except for the fact that the drug lord that they were attempting to bust down and bring to justice had a video surveillance thing, and they didn't think to check the tapes. So you can watch some clips from the tape. It's pretty hilarious because you see a a cop in like full SWAT gear playing Wii bowling, and then you see another person like jumping for joy. I mean, literally jumping up and down like a giddy little schoolgirl, both feet kicking up in the air, hands raised up in the air because they got a strike or something. I don't know how to describe it. You have to see it for yourself. It's pretty ridiculous. Moving right along, I don't know if you've heard about it. Nerd Merit Badges over at twitter.com/nerdmeritbadges and nerdmeritbadges.com is trying to make an interesting little business venture out of different things that you can do to gain geek points. So they have family tech support, been boinged, if you've ever been on boing boing, inbox zero, homonyms, or open source requirements. Then there's even a fun little sash that you can actually put on your laptop. Now, the fun thing about this is that, you know, hey, I'm an Eagle Scout. I've been there. I've done that when it comes to merit badges. But I got to tell you, real geeks earn their merit badges already. And these topics, some of them are really good. Some of them are really kind of on point. Other ones are kind of a bit of a stretch. I think people need to send more suggestions for good Nerd Merit Badges over to nerdmeritbadges.com or just twitter.com/nerdmeritbadges. I thought some of them were really kind of funny and some of them kind of lacked a little bit. I like the family tech support one where it's actually a piece of pie with handcuffs on there, because seriously, sometimes you do feel a little bit strapped down. All right, finally, cell phone companies, listen. Motorola and Verizon are set to unveil the Entice. Yes, it has a funky-sounding name, but the Entice is a phone. That's it. That's all that it should be. It has 8 gigs of memory with a micro SD card, but nobody's going to use that. What they're doing is they're marketing this phone with nice, big, easy-to-read buttons. It's a common clamshell flip phone. They're marketing it to people. It's going to be available for $39.99 after a mail-in rebate of $50 because, you know, they couldn't make it entirely simple. So, you know, they're going to market this to all the people out there who just want a cell phone. There's so many people, I don't even know how to express how frustrating it is sometimes when you're reading all these fun and new stories coming out about all these different pieces of cell phone technology, and you realize that they're missing the one part of their market that has been crying foul since the very beginning. Yes, the text messaging and yes, video messaging and all of the internet and everything allow you a different revenue stream, but here's the thing. Some people aren't interested in all that interruption. They just want to be able to make a phone call when they absolutely have to. Enter the Entice and Motorola and Verizon. And they're teaming up to bring that to you. All right, that about wraps it up for the news in brief. So hopefully you got your quick little hits on some of those news. We have GeekCruft section, then we're heading on into the food and caffeinated bits. GeekCruft up first. Battle lines are being drawn for net neutrality and the FCC. I have previously done entire shows dedicated to net neutrality because it's something I'm very supportive of, trying to find the correct phrasing for this, but there's a lot of really strange things going on in the ether right now, and a lot of misinformation and stuff. So I'm going to take a very, very short time, hopefully, to kind of explain what net neutrality is. Because a lot of the people that I've talked to, people who are not geeks, people who are not techs, have kind of heard of it and thought one way or another based on the different pieces of information that they've heard. So let the talking heads go aside and let this talking head tell you exactly what's going on. Net neutrality is a founding principle of the internet. It's basically the company that you buy access to the internet from should not have any say on what you view, what you do with that connection. It basically says that the connection is an open door into the road. It's like having a driveway. It's like having access to a road that somebody else has built. The companies, on the other hand, seek the easiest way to maintain that network as they see fit. In order to maintain that network, they propose that they need to limit certain types of traffic. The only problem is there has never been any codified resolve between these two parties. The proponents of net neutrality have cited many, many cases in which network providers have willfully degraded services of competitors. So this anti-competitive pricing is one of the reasons that net neutrality was kind of the de facto standard to begin with. And this does not mean that if you have a DSL or if you have a cable modem that they're going to be the same speed. This does not mean that it's going to automatically slow down the internet. That does not mean that, you know, if content providers are unable to shape bandwidth or unable to remove harmful, what they view to be harmful content from the network, such as video streaming, Xbox Live, and other things like that, all things that they don't consider normal part of web browsing, you know, it does not mean that the network is going to fall apart. The way that I see it, and now this is the part that I consider to be up for debate. The way that I see it, the content providers in the United States have taken money from the government for a long time to actually build their network. They receive subsidies, they receive tax credits to build the network, to further reach into rural communities, to spread the internet as it is. The internet has been around since the mid to late 70s. The World Wide Web as it is has been around since the early 90s. Both of these two things are not mutually exclusive. For instance, all of the internet does not encompass that which is the World Wide Web, but the World Wide Web is in and of itself entirely encompassed within the internet. That being said and aside, the issue here at hand is whether or not we need government regulation to say that yes, you cannot willfully degrade services, and that, you know, there needs to be a level playing field. It's just access you're selling. There cannot be a tiered internet. You cannot select, okay, you know, these people we're going to charge this level of speed for, these people we're going to charge this level of speed. It says technology is as technology does. You need to move from that point forward. This does not mean that if you have a cable modem, you're going to be slowed down to DSL speeds. This does not mean that if you have a DSL, you're going to be slowed down to 14.4 modem speeds or 300 baud speeds, you know, because there are still machines that hook up to the network that the only thing that they need to do as a whole is transmit very tiny pieces of data. So they're still running on old modems, believe it or not. ATMs, when you're sitting in an ATM that's kind of orphaned from other normal buildings that an ATM would be attached to, such as banks or large malls or something like that, and you swipe your card, it actually dials a modem into a secure line into the bank. This does not mean that all of the network traffic via the iPhone or anything else needs to be slowed down to that level. What it means is that the reins need to be taken off the network as a whole, and that the content providers, which up until this point have been operating on the fact that no one would use the capacity that they were given. So if you had 10 people all trying to work off of one node that was, let's just say, given a 10 gigabit capacity. I know this is a huge geeky kind of section, and we're going to try and cull it down, but still, if you had 10 people all trying to use a 10 gigabit connection, they said, okay, well, you know what, there's 10 people there, and we don't seem to be using the full 10 gigabits, so what we're going to be doing is we're going to throw another 10 in there. So they've been saving money on, you know, the money that they've been receiving from government subsidies, not building the network nearly as fast as they had been, and all of a sudden they have double the subscribers on the same line. Now all you need is one of those subscribers to start streaming videos from Hulu, and the others receive degraded service. This is not the problem of net neutrality. The problem is that the fact that the network wasn't as robust as it should have been. Now that does not mean that if somebody's causing a massive harmful attack that the network provider should not be able to shut them off. It should be able to, but it's within reason. I do think it should be codified by law, and that's just my 9 cents at this point, but, you know, it's with interest, I'm pretty sure it'll add up to like a couple bucks. But the fight is now within the FCC. There's now people who support this, and the people who are against it are usually the content providers, and they're trying not to come out and say, hey, we're against it because of, you know, the fact that we can't create a tiered internet, and that we can't have, okay, Johnny's paying for a 5 gigabit connection, and, you know, Mark's paying for a 10 gigabit connection, we can charge Johnny 50 bucks, and we can charge Larry over there 100 bucks for his faster connection. That's not what they're putting out there. They're saying, well, you know, service overall is going to slow down to a crawl. I personally don't think that it's going to. I do think that it's going to take some tweaking to get the laws right, as laws always do, but I honestly think that if they have been accepting government subsidies for all this time, that they have to subscribe to the philosophy that the network is not theirs to control, that it is theirs to merely safeguard and allow access to. All that being said, we're moving on to some soccer robots. Foosball, that is. I know, there is no segue on this show unless we talk about one every once in a while, but we're just trying to move on and give you all the funniest stuff that I found online. If you remember the old table soccer or foosball tables where you had the men strapped to the steel pole and you spun them around, I really like the visceral feel of that, personally. There's a new version of this that's being sold, I believe, in Japan, and it's called Modern Take on Foosball. Basically, there's two teams of robots Robots. Yeah, robots. There's two teams of robots that are trying to move a soccer ball from one end to the other. There's joysticks. Yeah, this is all well and good. I think it's kind of fun, but I really think that you're missing out. It's kind of like that with bubble hockey. You could take bubble hockey and say, oh, yeah, you know what? But NHL 09 is so much better than bubble hockey. Nothing beats bubble hockey, all right? There is nothing that beats a good game of bubble hockey or foosball because you're at the mercy of the physical equipment in front of you. And I think that robots kind of need to step off on that one. All right, next little thing we have up for you here is a Bell alarm clock guarantees that you will get up. This is the type of alert that I need in the AM, and I'm hoping that there might be some other people out there. The only thing is, this thing is $65, and I'm not really willing to spend that kind for an alarm. I think there was another one out there called the Sonic Boom. It was like $20. You actually put it under your pillow, and it literally like tried to shake your eardrums out of your skull. I have an alarm clock for my grandfather that my wife refuses to let me set on the actual tone. She likes to put it on the radio and wake up nice and gently. Whenever the radio's on, I don't wake up, and then I eventually get in trouble because I'm still sleeping. I can sleep through pretty much anything, but if I have it on tone, it's so deafeningly loud that she's afraid that somebody's going to have a heart attack. You know what? Some days that's the only way to wake up without coffee, all right? All right, moving right along. Unfortunately, James May, one of the hosts of Top Gear, his Lego house in the UK has been demolished with chainsaws. I think it would have been actually kind of fun if the chainsaws had been made of Legos, but apparently that wasn't to be. So they shredded the house to pieces because nobody could find a way to move it off the land that it was currently sitting in the middle of the vineyard. And they donated all the Legos to charities because they couldn't actually give them away to other people. They had to, because that would defuse Lego's market. They were all donated blocks from Lego itself. They had to cut them apart and they gave them to needy kids, which is all great. And that's all well and good. And, you know, I'm happy to see that a lot of kind of plain and simple Lego blocks went into this. I really hope James actually kept the cornerstone that said James May 09 or J May 09, because I think that's just awesome. I think he should have. But there's a photo set up over at Crunch Gear so you too can follow the horror of it being cut apart. All right, now from the act of this simple act of destruction, we have a wonderful act of creation. Lego cello actually works. Somebody took the time to Nathan Swaya actually found a way to create a full-sized cello out of Legos. I'd like to see other musical instruments created out of Legos. I'd like to see a 5150 guitar in honor of Eddie Van Halen. I'd like to see somebody actually make a saxophone out of Legos. I mean, I want to see an entire Lego rock band, not the game. I want to see somebody actually make an entire set of rock instruments out of Legos. I think that should be something that the Blue Man Group does. But if you'd like to see the Lego cello, possibly, I guess a couple links in, I mean, who knows, maybe we'll actually be able to hear it someday, but from over at Uber Gizmo, they have a wonderful picture of Nathan actually sitting down and playing his Lego cello. I believe the only parts that are not Legos are the strings and the bow string itself, but the bow itself is made of Legos, which is awesome. All right, moving right along yet again. The Buddhist leader says fragging brings one closer to the gateless gate. Well, he didn't say that exactly, and if you've ever studied any kind of Buddhist literature at all, you know exactly what that means. High-ranking Buddhist leader says playing video games is better than meditation for letting out aggression. This is huge. This is fantastic. This completely validates anything that I've ever said. Well, not anything, but most things that I've ever said about video games. I love being able to sit in front of a video game, completely zone out, and just completely transfer whatever issues, whatever problems, whatever internal strife might have been happening in that past couple days, throw it completely into the game and walk out cleansed. You're able to completely empty your vessel of problems and hopefully bring yourself a little bit closer to samadhi. All right, and moving right along, the next little thing we have up for you here is Microsoft's Courier tablet. This is a huge, groundbreaking idea. Everybody's waiting for Apple to debut their tablet. They've never even commented or said that there is going to actually be a tablet. At least as far as I know, I've never even seen any possible pictures of one. But Microsoft has come out with an unbelievably slick design. This is 2 7-inch screens that are actually fashioned like a notebook, so that when you open it up, everything is touch sensitive. There's only one button on the entire thing. This like reeks of Apple kind of design aesthetic. And everything is done by multi-touch. Everything is done by stylus, so you can write on it. There's a whole different kind of OS. I believe this is like the next generation of what the Microsoft Surface was. This is it collapsed into a tiny portable form. When you really look at this thing and you really see all the different things that it's hopefully going to be able to do, this just got leaked out. When you really look at this thing and really see all the things that it's going to hopefully be able to do, you kind of get an inkling as to what our kids are eventually going to see as technology. It's like, they're not going to carry, you know, hundreds of books to school, or not hundreds, but they're not going to carry like 15 books to school. They're going to be able to pop a memory card in. Who knows if the memory card's going to have DRM or not, but they're going to be able to have a biology textbook on their screen. They're going to be able to mark it up and, you know, check yes and check no and take tests on this thing. There can be an entire ecosystem of awesome things that can happen when you have a portable computer that has connectivity, that has the ability to take the ease of physical interaction with something. I mean, yes, certain people have gotten really good at drawing with mice, but there's nothing that will ever replace the idea of taking a pen in hand and just being able to go with what you can feel. So this might not have, you know, full artistic ability yet, but it does have a stylus with at least a rudimentary kind of sketching ability. So who knows where this could take us? This is fantastic. I can't wait to see exactly what this thing looks like. And if anybody from Microsoft ever listens to the show, I would love to demo one of these. I promise I'll even send it back. I mean, this just looks fantastic, I gotta say. Moving right along, we have food and caffeinated bits, and we are rolling down the hill. I am currently at work to attempt to do a fun little coffee deliverable, I guess you could say, or downloadable, and there's a whole bunch of other fun things that I'm working on for PodCamp Philly. I'm going to be doing things like, now don't tell anybody, all right, but what I'm going to be doing is for one of the raffle prizes, I'm going to have a couple posters of that I'm currently designing based on some of the coffee sketches and the things that I've been doing a lot of research into the history of coffee. I have one thing which is not quite ready yet. It's a derivation of one of the things I talked about on the last show, which is a history of coffee cultivation from coffee's roots in the Ethiopian highlands to its later migration to Yemen, and then beyond that to the glass houses of Paris, to the Dutch East India Trading Company. I mean, everything all the way down to being able to pull up a cup of Sumatran coffee and saying, okay, so how did this get here? And the funny thing that I saw in doing that is that coffee is one of the few plants that you can get that has an incredibly low genetic diversity, which is basically, if you get a coffee bean from Colombia and you get a coffee bean from Sumatra, they are actually incredibly close genetically because they are from a very, very small set of plants back in the beginning. So this is all kind of tied into the fact that I'm trying to do some kind of large timeline and make it into a poster form. The other thing I'm trying to do is actually make a fun little coffee house style poster of some of the naturalist sketches, and I put one of the ones up there. And so hopefully you enjoy this brief little glimpse into one of the things that's going to be available at PodCamp Philly. All right, I also put a link up to two of the different little pieces of research that I'm attempting to do for this bit. So I have the one Project Gutenberg book that is actually all about coffee. It's very simple, by William H. Eukers, and it's actually available in its entirety on Project Gutenberg. I love Project Gutenberg, and if you're not familiar with it, it's basically anything that's out of copyright is available for free to download for non-commercial purposes on their website. So the All About Coffee was published in 1922. It's a huge tome of all about interesting different little things and the cultivation and the history surrounding it. So if you're interested in that, you can head on over there and check it out. I also sent a link up to one of the main articles that I'm using from over at Wikipedia, which is the history of coffee. And you can read all about interesting things. And my favorite phrase so far, which I've been practicing, and hopefully I actually have it here, but the favorite phrase that I found out in the history of coffee was actually, coffee's original name is quite possibly Kahawat Albin, which roughly translates into wine of the bean. As soon as I heard that, I was like, you know what, nothing more beautifully illustrates what coffee is to me than that phrase, the wine of the bean. And there you go, and here we are. So I probably butchered the Arabic that's attached to, so hopefully somebody will be able to correct me on that one. All right, another little thing that I found in my travels is Girl Genius is a great little webcomic. There was a period in time back in 2007 where there was a couple panels that specifically dealt with her creating a specific type of coffee that was so beautiful that it at one point brought a tear to one of the characters' eyes. Well, somebody sent me a link to the actual original panel, and it's now hanging on my door in work. It's a beautiful, massive, steampunk-style-looking coffee or espresso machine designed to make the perfect cup of coffee. Now, I send you a link to this because I think it's beautiful and I think it's great, but it also, I have the problem because I showed somebody in work. Now, if you've ever heard George Carlin talk about flamethrowers, he said flamethrowers would have been fine, they would never have actually happened, except the guy who thought of it had a friend who was good with tools. Well, one of the guys I work with happens to be very good with tools, and now we're both trying to figure out if there's a possible way we could create some kind of steampunk aesthetic espresso machine from scratch. I don't know if it's actually going to work. I've also talked to my father, probably not necessarily a good thing, because he is also very good with tools. And so who knows if this thing's ever going to actually come to fruition, but I think it's going to be awesome if it ever actually does. All right, next little story is actually from Ian Kath, one of my good buddies from Twitter, and he has a lovely review and unboxing video of an auto stovetop espresso coffee maker. This is probably one of the most beautiful industrial design pieces I've ever seen in relation to coffee. You could put this up there with the Chemex coffee brewers because the smooth line, the interesting integration of a lot of the different things, takes the mocha pot, which it effectively is. Well, I don't even know if it's officially a mocha pot, because a mocha pot doesn't actually have any kind of pressure associated with it. It's all just the boiling of the coffee itself. This actually can create up to 3 bar of pressure, which is up to 3 times the atmosphere in this steel housing of a little pot. And if you really kind of head on over there, you check it out. It is really, really, really neat. There's no way to actually describe exactly how this thing looks, but it allows you to make your own little lattes. The only thing is, it's a roughly $800 Australian. I'm not exactly sure the exchange rate to US, but I know 800's a big number, and unless we're talking about pesos, them's a lot of beans. All right, moving right along to a Coffee and Mad Science party video. This is where nerd merit badges kind of married into a boing boing, and there's an interesting little video where a bunch of friends got together to create a green to steam party where they all got together, they all had some fun. They roasted some coffee beans, and they ground them up and drank them right away from a vacuum pot brewer. This is all well and good, and I've had coffee that's freshly roasted. Like, as soon as it's done roasting, you seriously put it in the pot. This is all well and good, except it's not at peak flavor yet. Peak flavor occurs roughly 24 to 36 hours after it's roasted, depending on the actual beans, and nobody wants a party that lasts for 3 days where everybody's just staring there watching the beans degas. So I'm linking up this video because I thought it was awesome, and hopefully you will too. We're moving right along. Our favorite coffee curmudgeon, yes, Michael Allen Smith from over at coffeehero.com, actually managed to make it into the Seattle Times by being peeved at coffee houses, their price hikes, and he is the organizer of the Coffee Club of Seattle, and he apparently had given up roasting his own coffee when he moved to Seattle and has taken it up once more in kind of in defiance of coffee houses raising their prices for what he considers to be underdone and underappreciated beans, so he knows he can do better at home. So I'm actually kind of enthused that Michael's going to be roasting again, but I'm pretty sure that he has been in the past couple months at least. I know he's very knowledgeable about all things coffee, so much more so than I am, but it's interesting to read the article, and anytime you deal with mainstream media, there's always kind of a fuzz from what actually happened to what did. So I can't wait to see all these funny things. Next little thing we have up for you here is, my goodness, happy 250th birthday, Guinness. Guinness is probably one of my favorite beers. Even though it's only 125 calories, it is all kinds of lovely. And it is now 250 years old, originally brewed in 1759. So they have a 9,000-year lease on a dilapidated brewery at St. James Gate, so they have a couple hundred years left, actually a couple thousand years left on that lease, so all the best to Guinness in the future, and I plan to toast to you later on. But then up the last little story that we got for you here, squeezing in hopefully under the time limit for you that you have here today, WMF1 coffee pad machine is an interesting little piece of design aesthetic. It's a lovely little all-in-one coffee pad brewer designed to fit a a mug specifically, and with one button, you're allowed to brew one single cup of coffee. Here's the usability problem with this. I have favorite mugs of coffee. I have favorite mugs that I use for coffee. If I cannot put my favorite mug into your tiny little hole to actually receive the black gold, I'm not going to buy your machine. So there we go. I know it's just probably a design exercise at this point. I can't find out if it's actually being sold, but I apparently it is. There's no word on the price, Eric, or at least I can't read it. But it's kind of interesting. I wish that they had, you know, kind of like more of a general purpose mug shape, but this is kind of like a interesting little take on coffee brewers. And that about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. Hopefully you had enough time to actually stick around to the end. Thank you so much for listening to this show. It's the people like you, it's the people who actually listen in that make this show worthwhile doing. So thank you so much. If you are looking for this episode or any of the other episodes out there in the ether, please feel free to head on over to www.caffeination.com. That is caffeination.com for those of you who cannot spell. And if you have any comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail about anything that we talked about today, please feel free to do so by throwing an email to caffeination@gmail.com. Remember, we're part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. And the only thing I can say here is thank you so much for listening, and stay caffeinated, people. We'll